как вы подумаете о нашем городе?
Oh, excuse me, but my friend would like to know how much you enjoy our city so far.
Actually, I haven't been here too long.
Il n'y a pas été beaucoup dans ici.
Ну, рассказывайте мне, да или нет.
You want to know yes or no?
Well, tell him yes. It's a beautiful city.
Не кричайте, я слышу.
He says he can shout, don't hear you. Have you seen the palace?
Not yet, but I certainly intend...
Oh, you must. It won't be here much longer, you know. They are cleaning it.
Он на единственный?
Are you alone?
Yes.
No. We are here with you.
Oh, I see what you mean. No.
Yes. How many are we?
Here? Three.
You don't want to count the elevator boy?
Yeah.
Three or four?
Four.
But of course, there's your family.
But they're not traveling with me.
Where?
Where I'm going.
But you're here. How many?
Four. With the elevator boy.
Ah, he is in your family.
No, here.
And here we are.
Tsar Nicholas, for your crimes against Russian people, you die! Now escaping to Asia, Anastasia!
Amnesia?
До свидания, царина!
The rush.
Tower traffic is solid stone thanks to the infidel Grateful Dead at the pyramids, loud enough to wake the pharaohs.
Sleep well, Tutankhamun?
As well as can be expected, sleeping in a stone box.
See, among those movies, is Moscow on the Hudson.
That's why I went. Moscow on the Hudson, which was wonderful.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing because I love the fact. Here's, first of all, you're doing it in Russian, which is great, to learn to speak Russian, because you have to, because half the cast doesn't speak English. And you have to speak Russian with them to work. That's one thing, because it gets you into a whole other dimension. You know, you realize that this is the people who, in their dictionary, under irony, it says, see irony. You know, that they have, what? Live with it. You get used to it. You know, it's like, they have this whole level. They live on levels because of years of that. You know, it's like, better late than never, forget about it, we go on. Life is a bitch and then you die, but first you die. But wait, go on with me, shut up. And you got to experience a whole other culture. That was amazing.
Follow in your book and repeat after me as we learn our next three words in Russian. Dressing, roulette, border.
Zagranichny pasport.
When I learned about the Yale Russian Chorus, I immediately set up an audition and was chosen. There were about 40 of us. Denis Miskevitz, a diminutive Latvian man who looked like the dancer Rudolf Nureyev, was our conductor. Born in Riga, he had escaped Berlin somehow on a bicycle while it was being bombed in World War II. It was my freshman year and the second year that the chorus went on a concert tour to the USSR. Singing in the Soviet Union, of course, accelerated my learning of the language, and the trip with the chorus helped me to achieve the same fluency I already had with French. We sang on street corners and in open plazas and were surrounded by hundreds of citizens curious about anything American. They asked scores of questions.
Well, yeah, but what are you going to do tomorrow after we graduate?
Oh, well, I thought maybe I'd go out and find a bunch of guys who dress alike and follow them around.
What?
Or I could go pick up a couple of girls.
Who was that lady I saw you with last night?
Oh, that was no lady. That was Bottles.
Could you state that as a question, please?
Well, sure, Mr. President. Where can I get a job?
Many busy executives ask me, what about the job displacement market program in the city of the future?
That's right.
Well, count on us to be there.
Jerry.
Because if we're lucky tomorrow, we won't have to deal with questions like yours ever again.
Hiya, kiddo.
Shoes for industry, compadre.
Yeah, sure. Hey, you guys hauled in?
Oh, gosh, no. The means of production are held by all the people.
That's right.
No, man. You know, got any uppers?
Uppers? No, there are no classes in our society.
Or in our high school.
We're quiet, stupid.
Hey, come on, baby. You can tell me. You got any pot?
Oh, not yet, but soon heavy industry will make it possible for all the people to have everything it desires in a free marketplace.
What are we gonna do, Lieutenant?
What are we gonna do, Lieutenant?
What are we gonna do, Lieutenant?
Question, evaluate. Who shaves the barber?
You believe in Bell?
Okay, what we were going to do tonight, ladies and gentlemen, was we have a lot of stuff.
Here, look, here, how old?
How old is the funniest one of you guys?
Right.
Rocky.
Right.
Oh. Yeah, well, do you laugh when you beat your wife every week?
Who's Peggy?
Where is Ringo?
Where is Ringo? Who cares? I mean, really. Yeah, what is the meaning of life?
Wait a minute. We want answers. Okay.
Have you guys found the one?
Well, yeah. Who's Marty Yarbrough?
Touched a nerve, huh? That's terrible.
That's
we
all
love
we
all these local references. They're so meaningful to us, you know.
Why does the porridge bird lay his egg in the air?
No.
Why does perished birds leaves its hex in the air?
No.
Wise dove and perished bard's lazy leg in the ire?
No.
Wise ass the poor rich barn hong
delay
laser's edge in the fair?
No.
The doctor is unhappy.
Is the doctor turned off?
No.
Well, if you're turned on, aren't you happy?
No.
Are you a machine that only answers no?
No.
Then you can answer a question yes.
Yes.
Can't you answer my question yes or no?
Yes.
No. Please choose, Doctor.
No shoes, Doctor. No.
Ah, but you just did choose, Doctor.
No.
Doctor. You're lying.
Yes.
Excuse me, don't excuse me. Ah, Clem, you're making not making the doctor unhappy happy.
I'm not making the doctor anything. You're on, aren't you?
Yes.
Do you remember the past, Doctor?
Gypsy Doctor.
Do you remember the future?
Yes.
Forget it, Tim.
Don't forget it.
Here's one, Phil. How old are you guys?
Oh, it's amazing how well that fits in with what we were going to do anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. That is a good question, and it comes from Mrs. Denise Poonblossom. And the answer to the question, excuse me just a minute.
Please.
The answer to the question is we're each of us 400 years old. Four times four is 1600, and that's when we started.
What is reality?
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean by that?
I mean in whose movie?
Mr. Ishakwa.
Mr. Austin.
Yes.
40 years ago, you told an interviewer, if you can laugh at something, it has no power over you. You still believe that?
Yes, because it just sounds good, doesn't it?
It does.
Now I'm going to think about it. Let's see, why is that? It's good, isn't it? I mean, actually, when you really think back, when I really think back to...
Which isn't too far.
As Peter said, I
can't go too far.
Bad brain. Peter's right about FM radio, freeform radio, what we actually came out of, what we actually... How
created.
In God's name, we were created. These four odd people that, in a sense, had never met each other.
Four
had
is
not
even.
Been for the radio, yeah. We also came out of this odd period that we've all, obviously, looking at our age, went through of turmoil and foment and revolution, etc., and God knows all those words come rushing back at you in that world. And obviously, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I'm in there just blathering away. I'm 28 or 30 years old or whatever the hell I was, trying to talk about power, which is what... And then we would sit in writing sessions and try to work out the idea of power in terms of our work and all that, the grid and power and this and that. And it all got down to the feeling. Peter and I were both incarcerated by the Army for a while.
At that time?
Yeah.
At the time we were in the Army Reserves.
Everybody was running scared. Everybody, we as a generation were scared shitless.
They called Beat the Reaper when the draft at Yale.
In the Alumni magazine, they used to have this thing called Beat the Reaper, which was when, you know, picking numbers out of a hat. So, yeah. You know.
So we all tend to, on now that period of time, the period of time we all kind of rise out of, it is seen as kind of cutesy and charming, the way people look at the 50s now, and, you know, all those adorable hippies and all Woodstock and all this stuff. And everybody forgets the amount of fear and concern, particularly among intelligent people. It's quite true. Males, particularly among males. Yeah. And, we were trying to sort of ride right at the edge of commerciality and non-commerciality, and trying to make sense of what the hell we thought about anything and still try to make comedy records at the same time.
True.
Thanks, Kat. I hope that's a great answer.
Not only did I broaden my cultural horizons, I also learned a lot about espionage. We exhausted a series of intourist chaperones who were transparently Soviet agents keeping an eye on us, making sure we didn't help anyone defect to the West or pass secret messages or encourage revolution. One lovely spy, a comely redhead, danced for us at an outdoor performance and then breathlessly asked, "Where are you going next? Let me come with you." And she hopped on the train and apparently had sex with everyone but me. But I'm not complaining, because in Leningrad, I fell for a cute little blonde named Alla. And boy, there were times when I thanked God for meeting her. Alla introduced me to a culture very different from ours. For instance, when we went to a movie in the Soviet Union, you went to a kiosk to buy a ticket. But the movie was not necessarily in a theater. It might be a ballroom in an old hotel with wooden chairs, like where we saw a rather violent Polish film with Russian subtitles about diamond mining. So there I was, in the darkened ballroom theater. And when I sheepishly put my arm around her shoulder, she immediately removed my hand and placed it on one of her breasts.
Oh, that Louise Wong's got a balcony you could do Shakespeare from.
Well, we're trying to give the guy some milk, but he doesn't seem to know what it is.
But they sure know where it comes from.
It was much more fun than watching movies at the Film Society at Yale, though I scored there, too. We were all over each other, and no one around us objected, mainly because they had their hands all over each other, too. There was no privacy anywhere else in their city, so these makeshift theaters became make-out rooms. This is also why you might walk through a park and see a young man and woman practically dry-humping each other. You just looked the other way, because there was no place in their crowded family apartments for sexual intimacy.
Cousin Sonia, I'm in love with Alexei. He loves Alicia. Alicia's having an affair with Lev. Lev loves Tatiana. Tatiana loves Simkin. Simkin loves me. I love Simkin, but in a different way than Alexei. Alexei loves Tatiana like a sister. Tatiana's sister loves Trigorin like a brother. Trigorin's brother is having an affair with my sister, whom he likes physically, but not spiritually.
Natasha, it's getting a little late.
The firm of Mishkin and Mishkin is sleeping with the firm of Truskov and Truskov.
Natasha, to love is to suffer. To avoid suffering, one must not love. But then one suffers from not loving. Therefore, to love is to suffer, not to love is to suffer. To suffer is to suffer. To be happy is to love. To be happy, then, is to suffer, but suffering makes one unhappy. Therefore, to be unhappy, one must love, or love to suffer, or suffer from too much happiness. I hope you're getting this down.
I never want to marry.
The parties I attended there were also a little different. I remember hearing Elvis on a reel-to-reel tape singing Blue Suede Shoes in Russian, Spanish, German, and English. Many of the recordings I heard back then were done on, are you ready for this, X-ray plates. So much of Soviet Russian culture was about who you knew and what you could obtain in underground society. The bosses were only interested in graft and power. And this was not surprising, because they'd been so devastated in the war that they were paranoid. The attitude was, we will never be decimated like this again.
Communications have completely broken down. The Coney's slow torture of B-59 continues for 5 hours.
Until we hear from Moscow.
Leonenko, get to the bridge.
Savitsky never lost it. He just made a decision.
Sir!
It's time to load the special weapon.
Sir.
Give me your key, Maslenikov.
Withering temperatures exceeding 120 degrees, no contact with home. A ship virtually out of power.
It's time to load the special weapon.
And now seemingly under attack.
Come on!
We will sink all the fleet, but we will not humiliate Russia.
Savitsky was an impulsive man, but in his mind, at that moment, he made a correct decision.
Give me your key, Maslenikov.
What are you thinking?
Your key, Maslenikov.
He had no rights because Vasily was in charge. He was the commander of the fleet of all the ships. But Savitsky was the commander of this ship.
The commander is the second in command after God. These are the rules the submarines live by.
We don't know that this is an attack. For all we know, they are trying to surface us.
The future of the world now rests on Vasily Arkhipov's shoulders.
We have orders to defend ourselves.
You may be captain of this ship, but I am commander of this fleet, and you need my permission.
No, Vasily Arkhipov.
Vasily Arkhipov was our commander of the fleet. He was a submariner and a close friend of mine. He was a family friend. He stood out for being cool-headed. He was in control. He was a real submariner.
Two of us have agreed. Do I have your permission?
No. You need all three of us.
He knew that it was madness to fire a nuclear torpedo.
Place the special weapon in the initial position and restore protection.
And especially that he lived through that and saw it. He didn't hesitate to say no.
God only blessed the man because what would have happened after that? We would have been in nuclear war with Soviet Russia and there would may perhaps not be a world.
So much of their economy went into military might. Ala told me that in order to hold certain jobs, you had to be in the Communist Party. A friend of hers was working in a lipstick factory, but I learned if you were a member of the party, you might work in a particular building on the plant site where the machinery that was making the casings for lipsticks was making the casings for bullets. When the Soviet economy collapsed, it was due to their spending so much on the military and not enough to provide the average person with commercial goods.
giant toad supermarket. Attention, all money savers in the Richmond, Syracuse, Tri-City area, and all you wonderful people out at Ed Siegelman's Ground Zero Equal Opportunity Apartments. Yes, our manager, Darwin Paul, has opened up his pants early this Christmas to let you in for the biggest in unhealable deep cut discounts. Now, agglutinated beans, giant and hypo size, 2 for $0.47. Ma Rainey's moleskin cookies, buy the tin at $1.87. Save on peach pits, this week only, see our boy at the back. Dog food for the doggy? Well, doggone it, we've got all 6 varieties of Martyr Brand kidney and beef offal. Talk to Charlie Cranepool, Ed's dad, at our liquor department about choice USDA bourbon and rump roast cocktail party mix. Last and least, there's plenty of seasick fresh produce at our vegetable counter. Don't worry about the flies, we won't weigh them. So wary shoppers, take the lift out of life and drop your load on the giant toad. We give double discounted multiple identity stamps.
What have you got? This liter of PJ Pro Bay wine, you know, this is a new with natural meat flavoring. You're the first sucker to buy it. That's 60. And, oh, you got one of these Bear Whiz beer belts. I think these are so cute. That's 66. And what is that beef jerky? Do you remember the price of it? I can't see it without my glasses.
It's 59.
What is it? Who's
59.
That? Oh, thank you, young man.
$59.
Well, that's $185, Lester. Isn't it a relief to see the prices coming down at last?
You ought to know, Martha, you're the mayor's wife.
Oh, pop baseline, don't know nothing.
Now that's a long, coiling
pot. Oh, my goodness.
A Chinese homer. I say these scrappy crow aggregations
go pro.
Way back into contention.
Left running like a scared rabbit, rounding third base. Mickey Mantis under it at center field. Mantis backpedaling. Of course, he's got that 360-degree vision. He's back under it. Mantis under it. He's praying for it. He's
got it.
Oh,
dog dingers. What a shame. Oh, well. Oh, I tell you, you know, Habeschlein has been carrying on like this for the championship game, dragging on for an extra week.
He's a great announcer. I bet you listen to every word he says.
Well, Mom. I try to follow it. Here, catch. Well, what time is it? Oh, my goodness. Here, let me just turn this off.
Don't turn it off, Mom.
Oh, no, this is a cute show. I don't miss it if I can.
No. Well, it just sounds like all boogies to me.
Good night, I think they're cute. Yeah. Good night, Les.
Good night, Mom.
Oh, no. Look, be careful of the PJ Proby wine display. Land sakes. I'll have to get the mayor to clean that up later. Oh, what can I do for you, Sonny?
This here and.
Oh, that's all right.
It's catching.
Oh, no.
And a pack of forums.
Forums. Oh, yes. Here they are. These have little gladiator tips. They're cute and strong.
I know.
Good choice. That's 65, and that holiday decanter of Wild Crow is on special. $214.89. That's a bargain for a collectible like that. Look at those eyes. They'll follow you wherever you go.
That's why I bought it.
Come again now.
$19.99. Mm-hmm.
Failure Brothers Pharmacy, 4144 Euclid Avenue at the barricaded Gorge and Clutter is open 10 to 10 after the curfew for ladies and gentlemen of the colored persuasion. Down Home Savings on Night Oil, Eyewash and Lip Stiffener, Dr. Baird's Witch Spray, Pixie Leech Chicken Whitener, Soil of the South Shoe Shine Kits with an extra bottle of yellow, Government Agent and Welfare Police Spotting Cards, Madam Eureka's magic number pads with a lucky number for someone on every page, and a postcard picture of 103rd and Central in Chicago, Detroit, Los Angeles, Kansas City, Philadelphia, and Newark. Yes, folks. Remember, that's Balliol Brothers. Prescriptions filled without a prescription after 10, and loads of items not normally available in the state on display in the back. Just ask for Miss George and tell a necessity sent you.
After we'd gotten to know and feel up each other pretty well, Alla let me come to her apartment to pick her up for a date. We had previously always met somewhere in the city, and I soon found out why she hadn't wanted me to visit earlier. Outside, it was typical of other buildings, a blocky, huge, Stalin-era complex with a central court where they sometimes had a little movie theater or a laundry or a small grocery store. But once I stepped inside, I was shocked. It had been damaged from the war and never repaired. So part of the interior was burned, the staircase was damaged, and there was graffiti on the walls. They simply left the damage and rebuilt the outside of the building.
Only a few steps from the opulence of the Hermitage, the city has a completely different feel. Unfortunately, behind the facades, St. Petersburg has another, darker side.
The building is collapsing inside, so maybe you notice there are cracks in the walls, so it looks like it's falling apart, and nobody takes care of it.
How long have you been living here?
For 20 years. It's really a privileged area, and when I say I live in Millionaire Street, people make big eyes and say, oh, it's great. And I say, it's not great. We don't know what to do, either to preserve the main facades and to do the whole reconstruction of the historical areas, or to destroy them, or to let it as it is until it falls apart.
Can you tell the story of Prince Potemkin?
Prince Potemkin was a favorite of Catherine the Great, the Russian Empress. He was a field marshal. When Russians captured the Crimean Peninsula, he invited Catherine the Great to come and to examine. And Potemkin built painted villages. Nobody lived in them, but they were like, you know, theater scenery.
Basically just the
basically
walls.
Basically the walls, yes. And Catherine was greatly impressed. And since that time, they started to use that expression as Potemkin's villages to explain things about forgery, about false things, about deceit. We compare this expression with the view of our building. I told you that the main facades look nice. Even the chimneys are painted only on one side. You can see nicely painted chimneys when you sail on the Neva River or if you walk on the Millionaire Street. But when you get inside from the upper floors especially, you can see the chimneys are falling apart like the walls.
And that's when I got it. That's the Soviet Union. They make it look okay on the outside, but inside, everybody had to keep a terrible secret and suffer. You had to walk up a tilted staircase, still riddled with bullet holes, and you better keep your mouth shut. In fact, the only way you knew you could talk freely in the Soviet Union was if you had a friend who worked in a restaurant who might tell you, "Sit at this table here. The microphone doesn't work anymore."
Another ad in the paper said, "We guarantee our furniture and we stand behind it for 6 months." That's the reason I left Soviet Union. I don't want people behind my furniture.
We were in a market in Moscow when I got a personal lesson illustrating the subtleties of Soviet financial dealings. At the time the Russian chorus was there, Nikita Khrushchev had encouraged people who worked on the kolkhoz, or communal farms, to keep private gardens of their own and sell their own produce or homemade handicrafts. So there I was with some Russian friends passing by a flower stand run by two pretty young Russian girls. Suddenly, a clunky Chaika, a popular dull gray car, screeched up at the curb. Two enormous thugs in their ill-fitting Soviet-era light gray suits strolled up arrogantly, tore apart the flower stand, and smacked the girls around, knocking them down. Two of my pals angrily approached, verbally protesting. The Soviet officers, most likely KGB, got beat up, were forced back into their car, and blasted away down the street. I asked them what that was all about. "Ничего чорнирink," they said. "It's nothing, just the black market." You see, to the KGB, even though it was clearly in public, they were selling items outside the Soviet system in a city where the state controlled the sale of goods. The whole USSR was like a huge black market, with a few state-controlled businesses sprinkled here and there. And that's why when the Soviet Union did in fact break up, you had so many mafia types and established oligarchs take over so easily. When I came back to America, I told anyone who would listen, the Soviet Union is going to fall apart. It's going to implode. It's a false front. They're going to bankrupt themselves. Nobody would listen to me. Certainly not President Ronald Reagan, who took credit for the inevitable downfall of the country.
Hey, Reagan.
Reagan.
Reagan. You're not too great. And it's never too late.